Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and I am live back in Studio AOC with two superstars here today and welcoming my leader of the Warriors, John Stambaugh here, who is learning and taking over to step up to the mic and bring all these Warriors in. So we're on our third podcast today of the Art of Construction Warrior series, and there is so much experience at this table. I'm looking out here. We did a pre-interview, and the statement says was, there was so much great conversation. I hope it comes out on the podcast, and I know it will because we're going to guide this thing here today. So, but they have so much experience that they've recently formed a new business, and that's why I wanted to have them on our third episode and talking through how we can be better examples as leaders for you Warriors to grow your business within the Art of Construction. And on this series, we always are going to end with a Forge story, and they got some great stories of their initial project. So we're going to get to know the two founders of Truth Design Build today and their Denver's values-driven residential design build firm. And so this is building off of a bunch of great podcasts we've had over the years. Go all the way back to show 70 titled Design Build versus Design Bid with Jeff Gates and Jeff Ayers of Denver Design Build. They both worked within that company, and they worked with our trusted advisor in my window and door company, Adam Sinclair. Shout out to Mr. Adam. Thanks for leading this charge to get Justin Luna and Josh Gubser, the owner-operators of Truth Design Build. So we're going to go through the speed round, but first, let's talk through, John, what is our main story that we want to get out here today? So like I said, the main message for you, Tribe, is that it's a wealth of experiences of leading the Warriors, and we're going to discuss and challenge each other about how we can help each other with that. And how is this going to benefit you? We're all in this together, and we're all living the art of construction. And what we want to solve is all help build better buildings. So my main perspective is let's put some good, bad, and ugly out there about ourselves, how we can help build better systems and learn together and coming together as different owners here. John, welcome to the stage. What are you hoping to get out of this bad boy?
Well, like you said, Devin, it's the experience around this table is amazing. And one thing that we've all learned over time is how do we carry our ambitions and our core values through to the very end of the job, all the way down to boots on the ground. I'm really hoping to learn how we come together. We learn through paying our tuition and show our core values to the Warriors in the field.
Awesome. Well, let's get to know Justin and then Josh. Lock and load. Fire up the beverages. Justin, what's your favorite beverage?
I really like tea. I have two favorites, matcha green tea and ginger peach chocolate truffle.
That's a type of tea?
Yes.
That is on my list. See, and I've asked
gonna
a favorite.
Have to try that.
I didn't have a ring to you were.
It did have a ring to it.
Justin, what's a favorite place you've traveled?
I think my favorite place I've ever been to was Lake Powell. And just the experience of being there on the water and the scenery and just how majestic it is with family. And I just have some fond memories from houseboating at Lake Powell.
Yeah. Your family members, I had a college trip there, and there was a buddy that worked for a beer distributor, and there wasn't that many of us. And I remember him saying, well, I'm going to bring 28 cases of beer. And I'm like, we like to drink beer, but out on the water there, like it was down to like nothing left the last day. I was like, oh my goodness, it was awesome. What's your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos we're going to talk about breaking down and moving forward that we passionately call the art of construction? But what do you do outside of that?
My wife and I have been together since high school, and we have four children together. So, you know, that's really my interest outside of work is just being a dad and being a husband and being interactive with the things that our children love to do. So I try to get involved in their interests and, just have fun doing it.
Awesome. That's great stuff. Well, Josh, he got a head start, so now you get to go next. So, Josh, what's your favorite beverage?
I would say LaCroix Limoncello. And then if you mix it with a little bit of Crystal Light and vodka, it makes for a great Friday afternoon drink.
It sounds a lot of good ingredients coming together. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's a favorite place you've traveled?
You know, my work-life balance over the last, 10 years has been tilted quite a bit more towards work. So I haven't done a ton of traveling. But I did get remarried this past October, and we went to Mexico this spring for our honeymoon. And that was wonderful to do the whole resort thing, you know, sandy beaches, drinking pina coladas while reading Brené Brown on the beach in Mexico for a week was fantastic. I really enjoyed that.
Well, I'd say I'm jealous, but after this podcast, I'm getting on a plane to St. Martin's, and I haven't been anywhere for 2.5 years, so I am a little bit jazzed going into this podcast. So what's your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction arena we call the art of construction?
So I have a blended family, and I have 5 kids, so I feel like I have to say Justin's answer, or I'm a bad person.
Fair.
And that's definitely true. It's important for me to be a good dad, an active dad, a good husband. I think, we could have a whole podcast just on the importance of being a good partner and like romancing your spouse and, so on and so forth. But I won't get too much into that. I love fitness and nutrition. I work out, 4 or 5 days a week, realistically more like 5, 6 days a week. I've been a vegan for 19 years. I really enjoy fitness and nutrition, and I'm a music nerd. I've got like a 15,000 song library. I buy expensive headphones. I have a expensive, fancy music player that I listen to my expensive headphones on. It's I love music.
Awesome. Well, Justin, tell us your story that led you to founding Truth Design Build.
Well, that was an interesting story. Josh and I had worked together at a previous company, and we really got to know each other over those years we were there. And so we just always kind of kept in touch. But last April I had COVID, and I got laid off from a supervisor position for a commercial firm. So that really started the wheels turning, and it was really, the whole COVID thing was a really weird year for everyone. But Josh and I stayed in contact, and we had communications back and forth, and what are you doing, and he really brought it to the table, hey, maybe we should partner up and see where it goes. We have all this experience together, and I had previously had my own company when I was younger, and had some successes and failures and grown, so I was nervous to say, yeah, let's go for that again. Let's be owners, So that just the conversation of us coming together, I knew he had strengths that I didn't have, and that we could partner up and really form something better together. That's how it started. So
awesome. Josh, what would you add to that and give your story leading up to this as well?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, backstory, I started a company in 2012 when I was way too green. Worked my way up the ladder much faster than I should have, and then ended up going off with a guy, who'd been doing it for, 20 plus years. That was ultimately my mentor in that situation. It took me, probably a year to figure out he had no clue what he was doing, and then ultimately things crashed and burned, learned a lot of hard lessons, cost me a lot of money. But towards the end of that cycle, when, I'd essentially began the process of building processes, because I'd learned, I think like a lot of people where, construction is a bit more sort of like common sense, quote unquote, you kind of fly by the seat of your pants. There's not really, much development. I hadn't even heard the term pre-construction at that point. And I got things going in a good place, but it was one of those things where it's just sort of too little, too late. The damage had been done. The company was in debt, and it wasn't gonna change. There's no way forward, ultimately. So Justin and I had met then. I brought him on probably the last 6 months of that before we ended up closing down. You know, and then when I was offered a position at another design build firm, you know, I brought him on because he, you know, he's really good at what he does. He knows the field and cares more than, you know, anybody that I had known. So as we started working for this other firm and building the residential branch up, you know, he was instrumental in that and, you know, taking the field stuff on and really making sure that the vision in the office was coming to fruition in the field. You know, we both ended up leaving him a little bit sooner than I did. And I'd been offered a position at another large design build firm in Boulder. You know, and it just wasn't a great fit. Nothing bad about them. You know, it just wasn't the right fit for me. You know, so as I was considering moving on from that, you know, we connected and, you know, it's, I didn't think, you know, at that point that I would ever start my own company again because I've been burned so bad and lost so much money. You know, it's one of those things I had to like sell my house to pay off company debts kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, not a great position to be in, you know, so I never thought that I would do that again. Like I was, you know, comfortable, you know, being good at what I'm doing and working for someone else and not having to worry about those little details. But me being who I am, like I just wasn't satisfied with that. I just reached a point after doing it for several years, like, or I just wasn't satisfied. Like I could see, you know, I'm a critical thinker. I have a master's degree in theology, bachelor's in philosophy and theology. You know, it's natural for me to kind of look at things and poke holes. And so, you know, when I would see the stuff that I knew we could improve and, you know, make suggestions about, hey, have we thought about doing things this way? And just sort of falls on deaf ears where I know, like, you know, from experience or you know, I'm a numbers guy, building spreadsheets, things like that, you know, anticipating, you know, potential profit margin, showing how shifts in different processes can, you know, increase or decrease profits, whatever the case may be, you know, and then just sort of, you know, getting pushback, like, you know, ultimately, you know, if I see something better, like, I want to adopt that. What doesn't have to come from me. Someone else comes to an idea and says, if we do this, this is going to work better. Awesome. I'm all about efficiency. My wife and I kind of joke about that. Like, you know how we feel about efficiency. It's So it was just right time, right place. And we had all this experience working really well together. Justin was always my best super, you know, at all the companies I worked at. So, you know, right time, right place, and things took off.
I really appreciate you guys giving us that context because it really ties in perfectly about this whole series of elevating the trades. And in the intro, when I talk about it's John's, it's our third podcast together. When I hear you guys doing, as a business owners, you're newer to doing projects together. But there's a lot of, you know, learn by doing at this table here today. And we're all coaching and helping each other out. And that's kind of the journey we're going to go on today. But the first thing I kind of want to talk about is just carry on with the process thing. And in our pre-interviews, we were discussing about how, you know, right person, right seat. But before that is guiding this process along at the right time. And you don't want to hit somebody with that 20-page contract right up front. And the first thing that really jumped out at me is what we've kind of coined internally of the Art of Construction Tribe is our customer care wheel. And the whole idea is this wheel is just always rolling and always growing and all working together of these different sections. And when I went to your website, it starts about when you go to the process, it's not just another fluff thing. It starts with these info tracks and picture tracks with these call to actions that starts with our pre-construction and design process. Can you start, Josh, and talk through that pre-construction and design process?
Sure, Devin. So I'm sure everyone in the more typical design bid process has experienced that. You know, you get a set of plans from an architect or from a customer, you know, designed by an architect, and the customer says, you know, I've got X amount of money, and they send you a set of plans where it's like the set of plans are twice X amount of money. You know, I can think of one in particular. It's like, I have $600,000 to build this house, and it's a $1.2 million house. You know, several years
that
ago.
That never happens.
No. Yeah. Can you believe it? Can you believe it?
That's crazy.
What's scary is that's what we have to spend every day educating if that's...
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to go down that journey.
Right? Yeah. And that's where I think design build is the future, you know, because when those elements aren't connected, you know, you're just spinning your wheels. To me, that's just a massive waste of time. You know, so I always start from the perspective of budget, you know, and always run the numbers, you know, and I'm good enough at it now and, you know, been working with spreadsheets long enough where I can come up with a pretty accurate budget without plans based on square footage takeoffs. And well, not even takeoffs, like often just assumptions. Okay, we want 1,000 square foot addition over two stories. You know, that's roughly going to be this much linear footage of foundation. It's roughly going to be this much, you know, of hardwood. And, you know, the average master bath is, you know, 10 by 12. The average hall bath is 5 by 8. Like, you have to know some of the data, you know. But at this point, I've been doing it long enough where I can kind of plug those numbers in, you know, and come up with, you know, a plus or minus, you know, 10% budget that's, you know, accurate and line itemed and be able to go through it. So if someone says, okay, you know, I've got $350,000 to spend. So we can say, okay, well, we need to keep 10% of that a contingency. So we need to design towards 320. You know, here's what we can do for 320, you know, and be able to present that and then roll into design from there, because now you've set your parameters. So that initial estimate essentially functions as your scope of work. And then we're using that to build out the architecture. And there's always going to be differences because you're going from kind of a theoretical imagining to, you know, sort of actual, where now we have actual measurements and, you know, a survey and so on and so forth, you know. But if you don't have that, you know, if you don't have those parameters, if you don't have that connection, you know, then you, it's just not going to guide the process. And you really need it to. You really need to have the intersection of construction feasibility, you know, budget feasibility, and design. And I think one of the problems that we've run into is that there hasn't been that intersection. So I'm excited for the industry as a whole to be moving more towards that. And I'm especially excited about the, you know, what we've been able to do so far.
Super cool. I love how you talk about the conceptual budget up front, because that really sets the stage and sets the expectations early. Well, it's not some wishing well where you have, you know, but I really want this $750,000 addition, whereas you only have $350,000 to run with. So
yeah,
that conceptual budget's huge. How would you say that you take that initial process and then roll that into your construction process, Justin?
We talk a lot about the client and, you know, what Josh goes and does all his front end work. He's great at that. He knows the numbers really well. So that's a huge confidence booster for me. So we bounce ideas off each other a lot, and, you know, we have a lot of communication, and he brings me in. What do you think about this or that? Or let's, you know, talk to a trade partner, or see what we can do. So we really try to attain those dreams for our client, but, you know, there's reality too. So
right, and then that's where your process comes in that you've listed on your website. Can you talk a little bit more about how that process works?
Yeah, so we have the construction process that we have is construction scheduled. We have groundbreaking, project management meetings, checklists, do Friday update, draw requests, and then we have job complete. So that gives us a starting point for every project. You know, the construction schedule is very important.
It is, for sure. And then that, you know, I like that because it provides a roadmap for everybody to be on the same road and you know, headed in the same direction. Whereas if it's kind of this, well, when's the draw dates? When, you know, where's our key turnover points? If as long as you have it documented and rolling, that's a great thing. So I like what you guys are doing there.
Yeah, so we use BuilderTrend, a construction management software, and we have our project manager, Lars Lindquist. He does all that data entry. He has a master template, so he's a certified super user with BuilderTrend. So he's awesome. Really invested the skills to be masterful at that. So I see that as an art form, so I really am happy to have him do the behind the scenes stuff.
I agree. I think the more we blend the technology and construction skills, the better buildings we build. And that's something that Dev and I talk about all the time. And there's a lot of podcasts in our series that exemplify that.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. And I appreciate you bringing up, you know, giving shout out to your warriors within the Art of Construction tribe of blending those things together. Right. And go check out their website. They've done a great job of mapping out their process. Right. But at the end of the day, Josh, you know, why work with truth? And this is a loaded question for all of us to think about. You better document that to have a purpose and a plan, of when I always talk about beginning at the beginning with the end in mind. So I'm putting you on the spot here.
You are. You know, for me, you know, I've always been a little bit of an out of the box thinker. Like, I don't fit neatly into any particular box, whether it's political, religious, social, whatever. You know, so I'm always thinking about doing, you know, the best way to do things. And, you know, I don't particularly care what conventional wisdom is on those things. Sometimes that works to my advantage, and sometimes it does not.
Understood.
You know, in this particular case, you know, what I've seen, you know, through commercial building and residential building, you know, they're drastically different. You know, frankly, I don't really see why. You know, I get some of the stuff. There's a lot more that goes into commercial building in terms of setting the jobs up for success. You know, they can be much larger scale, obviously. You know, but even a tenant finish, you know, commercial job where it's, you know, maybe $400,000 job. You know, there's a lot more time that would typically go into setting that job up than might go into setting up a $400,000 residential remodel. You know, and that's something that doesn't make sense to me. You know, on the commercial side, you know, you might have lawyers involved and you might have liquidated damages and you might have this, you might have that, you know, but when you're dealing with somebody's home, that should be just as important.
Great.
You know, so bring in that same level of, you know, pre-construction and setup and really the time commitment to set the job up for success. You know, so that's where I think we're doing things a little bit differently, is we're spending a ton of time up front. You know, we're doing those initial budgets. You know, I even do an initial preliminary schedule when I put those initial budgets together, because we do things, you know, we charge, you know, an hourly fee for management that allows us to charge a lower overhead and profit fee on top of the job, and also allows us to account for, you know, the specific hours for the specific job, you know, rather than sort of lumping everything together. You know, so I want to know how long this job is going to take. So, you know, I build out an initial schedule. Maybe it's, you know, 10 weeks, maybe it's 20 weeks, maybe it's 40 weeks. You know, but I want to be able to spend, you know, particularly at this point, like I've got it templatized, so it's not that long, half an hour, you know, to kind of think through the various time. Okay, how much demo is there? Can we get that done in a week or is it 2 weeks? You know, how much framing is there? Is that 1 week? Is it 3 weeks? Is it a month? Be able to think through these little aspects to say, okay, I'm confident that we can do this job in 24 weeks. You know, and as we get closer to the end, you know, Lars and Justin work together and they'll build that schedule out and build their trend. You know, but at least to this point, there hasn't really been any deviation. And I think giving us a workable schedule is super important. Like, you, setting expectations. Like, I've had jobs go the exact same way, you know, and one person's happy and one person's upset. You know, and it's all about the expectations. You know, if you have a job, each of them takes 12 weeks, but this guy thought it was going to be done in 8, he's not happy. This guy thought it was going to be done in 14, he is happy. You know, so we're trying to make sure that we're setting ourselves up for success, you know, not by manipulating metrics. I've seen companies do that. Like, this is how we achieve success. We're going to tell you it takes 19 months to build a house. Like, you know, and then we do it in 12, and then the customer's happy. Like, that's not really achieving success. You know, because no one would argue truthfully that it takes 19 months to build an average like 3,000 square foot house. You know, so going from the kind of initial conceptual budgets, you know, setting up our follow-up meetings, you know, on the spot. So, you know, when I'm there, you know, I say, okay, let's meet in 10 days and let's go over the numbers, set up an in-person time to get together. And then that way, you know, if there are questions, which there always are, you know, we can go through it line by line, we can go through a high level, whatever we need to do. You know, and that sort of feeds into, you know, the importance we place on transparency. You know, I don't want to feel like I'm hiding things from the customer. You know, ultimately I have high ethics, you know, and high standards for myself, you know, and I think often there's a disconnect between this is how, what I believe to be my personal ethics, and this is how I behave, you know, in my business role. You know, history is riddled with these examples. I don't want to be one of them. I want to be someone who takes consistency seriously, takes my beliefs seriously, acts on my beliefs, you know, and if I don't, like, what's the point of having that? What's the point of having beliefs that you don't act on?
Speaking the truth.
That's speaking the truth. That's sort of the whole idea behind it, is that we're truth design build. Like, We're not here to pull the wool over people's eyes. We're not here to, you know, I'm not interested in being a chameleon to try to appeal to everyone on the sales side. Like, this is who I am. This is who we are. This is what we do. Either you're going to like it or you're not. And that's okay either way.
Yeah, and a part I want to add of like what's been really fun breaking down, peeling back the onion, whatever you want to say about this whole thing of for today's conversation is that we live and learn, right? And yeah. That we've been talking a lot about that for you warriors to come in and help elevate us all together. And at the end of the day, you don't know what you don't know and you're jaded by what you think you know. Mm-hmm. And you need these perspectives to help each other to all speak the truth. Mm-hmm. And I love when you talk about like, it's like breaking down these silos of bringing the commercial to the residential. Mm-hmm. And I sit, when you're talking about a $400,000 tenant finish, the same thing of sitting down with them at their dinner table that they don't have while you've torn it apart and they're eating in the basement when you're doing remodels.
Yeah.
Those communication of setting those expectations are so important.
Yeah.
And I think about my window company, it's like there's times when they didn't do that and they're like, you just have to get this all in this week because I'm under the gun. I'm like, the windows don't come in for 3 weeks. Like what went wrong here? Right. So All of us working together to speak the truth from all your steps in the process and getting the right amount of help. That's what we're here to call ourselves out, get the right amount of help
100%.
To then go elevate the trades. Right, John?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of those things that we always fail at is there's some sort of communication hiccup, whether it's setting the expectations, whether it's communicating the end goal, what we're really dealing with here, delivery times, and that's malleable stuff. Some of it changes and you have to adapt and pivot and roll with it. But I'll ask both of you guys this question. You can kind of intermingle. What are some of the most consistent challenges you see on a day-to-day basis?
I think lately it's been the supply chain, the breakdown of the supply chain just from the whole COVID year. And communication's always huge. The expectations, you've already touched on that. So I think that's one of my struggles, to manage communication. That's what project management is. And being a leader of your company, you have to be that example to how to communicate. And I don't always communicate well, but you always know when you don't.
Oh, absolutely. it bites you every time, It's funny because we really are, we're in construction, but we're more over in the people business and managing that whole thing. So Josh, same question to you. What do you see?
For me, sort of like in my day to day, like I partly understand like why residential doesn't operate the way that commercial does, because it takes a lot of time. Like you have to really sink in, dive in, and you have to really be disciplined, about it. And, using things like Bluebeam to do takeoffs, really documenting, really understanding what's happening. So for me, sometimes like it's just like there aren't enough hours in a day,
right.
Like that becomes one of my challenges is, to perform with excellence takes a lot of time, and sometimes I'm like, man, I need an extra 4 hours today.
Yeah.
And I hate to tell you, there's only 24 hours in the day, right? So that's the part
we all have to manage. We all have 24 hours.
In the past, I try to make up with that by sacrificing sleep, which is not a strategy I recommend.
No.
Yeah. And and I would say kind of dealing with a customer perspective, because I'm more on the front end. People sometimes still don't understand like just how much things cost, especially, in Denver's market. We've been hit with a lot of supply chain cost increases, with, metal and lumber and, these days, manufactured goods, we've had all these issues with, stuff coming from overseas and, problems with, shortages of cargo and stuff. So, that's just sort of exacerbated the problem. So someone calls me and says, I want to do this addition or whatever, and this is how much money I have. And I have to be like, you could have done that 10 years ago, but these days, that costs, basically twice that.
Right. And you have to be able to say no, right?
Like yeah.
That's our hardest lesson that we seem to learn around these tables is the ability to say no and be able to stand behind it.
That's, yeah. That's
you don't want to say no because you want to be, you don't want to be the bad guy. Or you want to be the people pleaser. Or you want people to like you.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know to say no soon enough. And that's something that we've learned, you know, in the past where we've done projects and should have said no earlier.
Yeah.
It would have saved a lot. You know, the truth of, hey, we're not going to meet this, saying that is hard. But that 30 seconds of courage or whatever you want to call it can save you
free.
A lot of PTSD down the road.
Right.
Yeah. What I keep hearing over and over on this warrior theme is we got to ask ourselves, tribe, what are the consequences of saying yes to that?
Yeah.
Instead of, then maybe you'll say no a little bit more or set it up that way. So our day-to-day issues become something that overrides where I want to step back up for to ask you, Joshua, and then we'll ask you, Justin, as far as when John said the day-to-day. But what do you guys think is the most important to build about relationships instead of the bottom dollar of the shipping container costs this much more than 10 years ago? To me, I would challenge you to say, where's the relationship part of that above the day-to-day stuff? What's your take on that?
You know, I think life, you know, from a philosophical perspective, you know, I think life is all about relationships. You know, kind of going back to like my core beliefs, you know, even behind the business, like, you know, I believe that life is about, you know, loving and being loved. You know, you can't do that by yourself. You know, life is relational. You know, so when we supplant that and emphasize, you know, profits, you know, over relationships or over people, you know, I think we create a disordered model and ultimately a disordered society. And I think that we have a disordered society in that way. You know, so, you know, we have to be able to, you know, care for ourselves and provide for our families and so on and so forth, you know, but not at the expense of taking advantage of other people or mistreating other people, you know, or exploiting, you know, our employees or anything like that. We have to make sure that, you know, we're dealing with our customers in a, you know, gracious and honest manner. We have to make sure that we're dealing with our trade partners, you know, in the same way. You know, you're never going to find us, you know, screaming and yelling at our trade partners. You know, we're not, you know, going to not pay our guys. You know, we pay our employees above market rate and have a generous, you know, insurance package with profit sharing and everything else. Because, you know, hoarding wealth, like, there's no reason for it. Like, you know, if you have enough, enough is enough. You know, I don't have a need to be a millionaire or a billionaire to be happy. You know, if life is about relationships, you know, as long as I have what I need, you know, that's what matters. And so we can be generous and say, okay, you know, you initially asked for 25, but yeah, we can pay you 30 an hour. And, you know, it turns out, you know, we got this break on insurance. So, excuse me, we can do the gold package through Kaiser and not the silver package and offer to that to you guys at no extra cost and so on and so forth. Because at the end of the day, that's what matters. Like, that's how we influence the world. That's how we do good.
Love it. What would you add to that?
Oh, well, yeah, it's we really generally care. I think that's...
I love it.
That's what it is. We generally care about our clients and their well-being and, you know, our employees, our trade partners, our vendors. You know, I really care that they have a pleasurable experience with us. Because whether they recommend us or not, or down the road, I want to leave them with a quality product that's going to last. And that, you know, we got through any challenges that were come up along the way in a professional manner. So, you know, construction, it's digging in the mud and trying to build something beautiful out of it. So it's challenging, this industry, but I like that part of it. So,
I totally agree with all that. But at the end of the day, you on the pre-interview, you were talking about how, you know, you run the bank-funded model. Can you educate the tribe about that? Because we, you know, the relationship part is key, and we've highlighted all those things. But at the end of the day, the cash flow is important, and you got to set those expectations. So can you unwind a little bit more for the tribe what you were talking about with the bank-funded model?
Yeah, and I think it hits on both of these things, like you're saying. So on a bank-funded model, you know, a traditional model, you know, you sort of have a lump sum. You might say, okay, at electrical, X amount is due, and, you know, when framing is complete, X amount is due, you know, and then it's up to the contractor to disperse those funds. You know, in a bank-funded model, You know, they'll have your schedule of values, and you say, okay, you know, the framing was X amount, so the bank's going to cut that check for X amount to the framer, and the drywall was X amount, and they're going to cut that check for X amount, you know, to the drywaller, and they're going to cut the contractor, you know, essentially like, you know, their management overhead and profit costs. And so that's a model that we, you know, use for all of our jobs, whether there's a bank involved or not. So we say, okay, you know, we have a biweekly cost plus billing. You know, here are the five invoices we have from the past 2 weeks. You know, check one goes to the framer, check two goes to the electrician, check three goes to the plumber, and then there's check four, you know, that goes to us, you know, for our overhead and management fee, you know, and then whatever stuff that we self-perform. So that way, the only thing that hits our bank, you know, is money that's intended for us to keep. So we're not having to worry about, you know, oh, we can see that balance, but we still need to pay X, Y, and Z in terms of like ordering lumber packs or whatever the case may be. It's like, if it's there, it's there, you know, for our overhead and profit. And, you know, the lumber pack's already been paid for, and this person has already been paid, and so on and so forth. And that contributes overall to one, helping to maintain profitability and keep the books pretty simple, but also trying to eliminate that adversarial relationship.
Right. Helps speak the truth.
Yeah, exactly. Between customers and clients, you know, we want to be seen as advocates, not adversaries, as we go through this process. We don't want people thinking, "Oh, is he taking my money and running off to Mexico or whatever?" Because they know they participated in that process. They cut the check to the drywall. They know the drywall. I got it. That's not going
back to
our
the
bank.
Beginning with the end in mind. When you talked about we put a contingent instead of this hoarding approach of everyone's going to try to get me, so just hold on to it as long as you can, versus having this laid out and having them be part of that process.
Exactly.
Instead of this, a lot of chucking trucks fake it till they make it, right?
Yeah, I think educating our clients is an important task, you know, and we place that, you know, high up in terms of our priorities, because we want them to be able to make, you know, intelligent, educated decisions about their project and say, okay, you know, I've got this much to spend, you know, what are the buckets I want to put that into?
Absolutely. I think that you hit a really key point right there about educating your clients. It's that's one of the things we do here at Tribe, is really educating the end user. We talk about that a lot and what that means in our business, and that we educate them through the way we act and the way we treat each other and the way we build these relationships. And I think that's a really key thing that as we go forward in all these podcasts and our journey, that's something that really needs to stand out. It kind of ties us into the next question is, you know, when you look at the lessons that we've learned over years and the failures, what are the ones that stick out the most to you? And is there a common thread between them? Justin, why don't you run that one?
Yeah, I think everyone intends, I think, to do it well and to execute well and to have it a good outcome. But that doesn't always happen. So just every job is, I look at every job as somewhat of a prototype. I mean, you can try to systemize it and template as much as you want, but ultimately in remodel, every house is a little bit different and they all have their secrets. So when you learn something, sometimes the hard way, that's the best way to learn. So you just take that and you apply it to a process, so that gets checked off the next time. So what I like to do with Lars, for example, our PM, is if something comes up and it's a problem, I immediately call him and say, put this in the checklist or put this in the master template, and then we'll know for next time. You know, so take that as a learning experience.
Totally.
And look at it as in a positive. Well, I won't do that again.
Right.
You know, so
that's that tuition we talk about, you know. You're like, oh, that hurt. Let's make sure we don't do that again. So that, kudos to you guys for documenting that. That's really awesome. What would you say, Josh, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say all of our processes and stuff are really, you know, learned from experience, you know, kind of what to do and what not to do. You know, one of the things we're talking about in the pre-interview, you know, was buy-in. You know, you work and develop all these processes, you know, but if there's not buy-in from the people involved, you know, and I have had multiple jobs where, like, I had to take, you know, the past where I had to take over the supervision and management from other folks, because, you know, the way the job was supposed to be implemented just wasn't happening. Yeah. You know, and so one of the ways that we're trying to fix that is, you know, one, having people that are intrinsically motivated, you know, two, you know, having performance bonuses like on every job, and three, giving people the chance to, you know, own a stake in the company, because ultimately, you know, we're all motivated, at least to some degree, you know, by financial success, and giving people, you know, a part of that, I think, not only motivates them to perform, but also, you know, you perform better when you care more. And if you're part of what's happening in a real tangible way, you're just going to care more.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Like we do the same thing in our companies as we look for the right personality versus the right experience. Experience is important, but the personality seems to be way more important than the actual experience, if you have the ability to train. But I like that. I think the idea of having those lessons learned along the way, and most of them are pressure points, you know, like, ow, that hurt. Let's not do that again, you know. Yeah. That's a very common theme out there in the Warriors is those pressure points. And I can't wait to peel that back more.
Yeah, and stepping back up to, you know, the Art of Construction mission is for contractors and its affiliates. You talk about the future of design build, and I think it's the whole Amazon squeeze has just changed the game for everything of how we're talking about elevating the trades to be better with our customers in the customer care wheel. They just have a different thought process than it used to be. So we have to evolve with that. And so the podcast is for contractors and its affiliates, and I use the word affiliates because it's changing every day, right? Mm-hmm. To connect the right technologies and products to the right handshakes. So that's what this platform is for all of our podcasts, right? For us to grow our business, because either you're growing or dying, right? And so what I asked Justin and then Josh is, how do you see technology playing into the construction world, and what challenges do you see that we have to overcome? And let's put this in the mindset of connecting the field to the office, that we have to manage the things we don't have enough of, and that's time and money. And I've had the pleasure of interviewing so many founders of all these amazing apps and this and all these cool tools. You mentioned Builder Trend. We did a whole deep dive series with Builder Trend, a great company. And so when we go to these companies and hear their story, what's your guys' take from the field of the future of how we can really help these companies make the Warriors be elevated in the trades?
That's a great question. There's so much change, and you have to be able to change and adapt and take on new skills, new tech, I guess is what I want to say. I come from the background of in my earlier career, I went to architectural drafting school. And so, you know, we would draw in 2D, and then 3D really came around. And I guess I'm showing my age because that was a long time ago. But, you know, as I've seen it evolve into, you know, virtual reality, LiDAR, photogrammetry, volumetrics, things like that, yeah. Digital fabrication, you have to marry the old world skills somewhat with the new tech.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing that, you have to be able to not only swing a hammer in the correct way so you're not getting carpal tunnel syndrome, but you also have to be able to open up your phone and look at what app do I need to go to find this information so I can be a good communicator, or how do I lay this out? So it's really, you know, a marriage of, you know, we've been building for a long time. A lot of that information is getting lost. So, but I think it's very valuable to look at the past. I mean, you have some great tools in here, Devin, from the past. And you have to look at the past and say, well, somebody's already kind of done this before.
Yeah.
How do we do that? How do we take what we can learn from history, apply it to the new tech of the day, and at the same time say, well, there's no perfect software. So it's really looking at it in a way of problem solving and how do I develop myself in the skill set? How do I become better at what I do and become, you know, I look at it as being a woodworker is being an artist in a way, you know, being an entrepreneur is an art form. I see beauty in that. So I hope I answered your question.
No, well, I loved your picture track because I'm visualizing. Okay, at next tailgate talk. I don't think we've ever done one on swinging the hammer for a carpal tunnel.
Right.
But this is like then I think about that. But then you also take about your thumbs to be able to use the app on your phone, and then you reference you're sitting here in the studio. And for my window and door company to go to the past, I got educated a part of the Colorado Woodworkers Guild, and I was just fascinated about tools before a battery. Now we should be using battery powered stuff because it's there, right? And using an app to track the battery powered stuff. But you got to go back to the beginning of say, how did they make in my window and door company a sash before there was electricity? And you sure appreciate that when you learn that, just like you appreciate how the app can tell you where the batteries are for all your tools today. There's a big technology disconnect there of how that works. What would you add to that, Josh?
I mean, again, my end's kind of more on the office side. You know, I see Zoom was obviously immensely helpful. You know, Zoom, Google Meets, and, you know, similar ideas, you know, for doing architectural meetings. And frankly, you know, we've continued to use those tools even now that things have relaxed a bit with COVID. You know, there is usefulness in that. And, you know, not having to do every meeting in person, not having to spend time, you know, driving around when you don't have to. You know, we can Zoom with customers. We can Zoom with the guys in the field. You know, because if it's like the job's 45 minutes away, you know, and you can Zoom and see what's going on and kind of answer questions about how to solve this problem, you know, that saves you an hour and a half. You know, it's an hour and a half of productivity that can go towards something else.
And I challenge us, we've learned that now. Now we got to train the warriors to be able to turn on their phone that they're still getting used to say, just call me on FaceTime or Teams or whatever your company uses. Versus just wait till you come back and tell me all the problems and now what do I do?
Yeah, we struggle with that on a daily basis. You know, it's like we have a couple guys that are really good at it and they've you know, they're digital natives, whereas the older folks are digital immigrants, right? And so some people don't even know how to use their smartphone, you know, and so
or they just don't want to, or they just let the other warriors show them how there is value, just like they need to have the trade show them how you actually build this wall or install this window or plumb for this tub. That yeah. An app doesn't do that for
right.
you.
But you have to learn, you have to always be educating and learning. You know, for me, there's some great content on there on YouTube and Instagram and things like that. So there is education out there that you should look for if you're struggling. So if I was doing something on site and it wasn't working, I got to the point in my life like, okay, something's trying to tell me here, you know, that I'm doing something incorrectly. I might just try to force it or keep going, but step back, look at the big picture. Oh, maybe that wasn't working because it's the wrong size or something like that. So I'm guessing where I'm going with this is that you have to learn the skills and the why things were done a certain way. And then the frustrations of those, and then how to apply the new technology to it. So I don't think we should be using hand planes anymore, right? But can we still get the value of why they used a hand plane?
Yeah.
You know? So there's a certain reason behind why things happen. So you have to marry the new technology with that. So
yeah, and take old lessons like Albert Einstein, the definition of his insanity is to keep doing it the same
exactly.
way and expect different results. That's right. What I keep hearing about you guys to say, there's a better way to build better buildings. And yeah. And it takes a whole Art of Construction tribe to talk about that and figure that out. And but then you got to take that global Art of Construction tribe down to your mission that's actionable. What's your take on that, John?
Yeah, you know, and then looking at your company, I looked at your mission statement and I thought, boy, that's pretty interesting. And I really ran through it and I'm like, huh, I like it. And I want to learn more about how do you take your mission statement and actually turn that into an actionable thing that carries through not only your company, but your partners as well. Mm-hmm. And Josh, I'd ask you that question. How do you make that mission statement actionable?
Well, we do... What
is your mission statement?
So our mission statement is that we strive to provide a unique customer experience rooted in an unwavering commitment to transparency, creativity, and attention to detail. We focus on building lasting relationships with everyone that we work with, whether a client or trade partner, and we do our part to minimize our ecological footprint and promote justice and equity in our community. So for a construction company, I think we do have a pretty unique mission statement, you know, and that's purposefully so. Like, we're trying to do things differently, you know, in every way that we can. You know, and I'll leave it at that for now. So how we make the actual, like, that's the important part. Like I said, like, beliefs without the follow through, you know, beliefs that don't manifest in our actions and our ethics, you know, those aren't really beliefs. You know, if they were, they would manifest, you know. So we do things like, you know, we donate 10% of our profits to local charities addressing housing and climate change. You know, obviously, you know, doing high-end work, you know, we contribute to some degree, you know, to making houses more expensive, you know, where people are hiring us to spend, you know, $500,000 on their house or whatever the case may be, you know, that becomes a more expensive house, you know, and that's problematic. So, you know, we are contributing to, you know, various local nonprofits, you know, to do things like help alleviate homelessness and affordable housing and stuff like that. And the same thing with ecology. Obviously, there's a pretty big carbon footprint to what we do, you know, so we try to alleviate that by contributing to planting local trees. For example, you know, these days it's very common to use things like zero VOC paints, LED lights. You know, when we started using them years and years ago, you know, that was less so. And I'm glad it's taken off. You know, it's less of a unique point for us, but, you know, the fact that more people are doing it is a good thing. You know, we're looking at having quarterly volunteer days. Admittedly, we have not had any of those yet, but we do plan to have them soon. You know, we provide living wages to our employees as well as health insurance and profit sharing. So again, it's not about amassing, you know, fortunes for us as individuals, but about, you know, sharing those benefits with, you know, everybody that contributes to the process. There's no reason that the people, I feel like, you know, in every industry, like, the people doing, like, the actual work on the front lines, you know, the people that are necessary to get the work done are often viewed as sort of cogs in the machine, right, you know, and not viewed as being instrumental. Like, we couldn't make the salaries that we do without the work that they're doing in the field. So the idea that they would participate in the gains from that seems like a no-brainer. It seems
it does,
like, it's obviously the right thing to do.
I tell you, and Tribe, you should listen to that, because this is the forefront of changing the culture. This is something that when I read their mission statement, I thought, huh, that's refreshing. And the more I hear you guys talk about it, and the more I hear you guys talk about how and why you're different, it really strikes a chord with me, because that's the whole point here is in order to elevate our trades and our warriors, we have to change some cultural things that have been going on for years and years and years and years, thus blending our technologies and our old world skills all into something that makes more sense for not just the heads of the company, but the warriors swinging the hammer, and also the community around us where we're working. So I really like how you brought that mission statement back around. Justin, how do you see that mission statement in the field through your trade workers?
I really like to promote justice and equity in our community, and that goes with our relationships. So a lot of our trade partners, they want to show up. They want to have their materials there. They want to know what to do, where to place things. They want to do good work, and they want to go home to their families. So, you know, that's, to me, actionability is that you have those things ready for everyone, and the job goes smoother. You know, if you can have all the information there and you're communicating in your materials and stuff. So to try to do the best that you can. And if you don't, just pick yourself up and learn the lesson and keep, don't quit.
Awesome. That's cool. I got another one for you. So, you know, all of these things we talk about, these lessons we're learning, these struggles we're having, why is construction appealing to you?
I just think I was born to want to build, you know, growing up watching PBS, Channel 6 and Channel 12. I don't know if you're
totally
to Denver, but
Bob Vila
and Norm Abram and This Old House. And then, you know, that really set the stage for me, saying, I love what those guys are doing. You know, you can see you can see what you build and you have that satisfaction of having that product, and it's going to be there a while, you know, and people are going to make memories in their home. And that's what's really attractive to me, is that that's something that I see as quality that, that lasts. And, you know, there's relationships behind it, that life happens in a home. So I want to be able to bring that to the next generation.
That's awesome. I really dig that. I think a lot about that as we do projects, and you think about, you build something and you think, huh, what kind of life's going to happen behind these walls that we
exactly
just made better, you know? On that note, let's highlight a couple of the Truth Warriors. You guys want to tell us about some of the folks in the field that turn the wheels for you?
Yeah. I'll start with, I got to take my brother.
I know, figured you right? might.
So, so we grew up kind of liking woodworking, and he's a mechanical engineer by trade, and he just had some situation things happen where, you know, sitting by in a cubicle, it's not really that fulfilling, I think, for some people. It's necessary, but it's just maybe not fulfilling. So he's a very active guy, and we've had a lot of experience in the past doing wood turning, and we went to architectural drafting school together and things like that. So, you know, just talking about, hey, can you help us here and there? And then it turned into this, well, yeah, I actually want to do this full time. So, I mean, that's really bringing somebody up that not necessarily their career has been there, but they made a career shift.
I love that. Yeah. We're starting to see more and more of that, working with people in the field, and that cross shift in a mid-career where they're like, you know what, I am just not satisfied. I want to go build something. And I think we're going to see a lot of new warriors come out of that arena. So that's awesome.
And construction needs those people. We need 100%. These different perspectives when we talk about, when I'm talking about working on the business and in the business, when you're asking these questions of how do we blend the future of construction, right?
100%.
Who would you add? What warrior would you elevate to the Art of Construction tribe?
I would say Lars. Lars is a more recent hire. I had... like Justin hired him previously at a previous employer. I actually knew Lars from church. He's married to a friend of mine. And we've obviously since become friends. And Lars is he's like me. He's a very process-oriented guy. He's very bright. He's an idea guy. I think companies... need those kind of guys, and I appreciate, you know, that we do have similar perspectives and strengths, because frankly then all the pressure's not on me.
Right. And well, then, and that's, you know, elevate and delegate, right?
That's,
and that's
the whole
what
point.
This podcast is about, you know, to where, you know, John, I'm really excited for this last part, that as I think about, you know, the 2-year journey of you and I going on to say, okay, how can we really take the Art of Construction to the next level? And it's not going to the VC crazy stuff in the future. It's like pulling it all the way back to how do we go through those lessons learned, that the Forge story. So 7 times for the first time, and then everybody's going to be so hooked. But what is the Forge story? What are we doing here? And then put the baton to them to have them teach us some stuff, how we overcame an objection.
All right, tribe, here we go. So we're back at the Forge story. And for those of you guys that are just joining us, the Forge is an area where we take an issue or a lesson that's learned and we just beat it into something that actually becomes useful or becomes beautiful. And so the idea here is you take an issue, you take a lesson learned that was painful, that caused a lot of angst, but then on the other side of that, you came through, broke through the ceiling, and really learned some valuable lessons. And that's what this Forge story is all about. And we have so many to choose from these days, but Josh and Justin, I'm going to throw this in your lap, and I'd love for you to provide us a Forge story of your own, and let us know what went bad, what you guys did about it, and how you turned that into something good.
You want to take it?
No.
Well, you get to.
why don't you go ahead?
Well, you know, we had talked before we started recording about, you know, some of the
everyone has a horror story.
Yeah.
You know, if you've been in this business long enough, you know that it can go bad and go sideways. So we had, you know, addition on a really old home in Denver, 1890s home, and just that was just such a challenge to get through. You know, expectations were out of line, the budget was out of line, the plans, architecture, everything that probably could go wrong kind of went wrong. So ran into knob and tube wiring, ran into bad foundations, you know, rubble foundation on a brick home. It's just, you know, some of these older homes there, they need a lot of love. So you don't always see that going in. So just that experience of the homeowners were there in a living in the basement, and it was just the stress level for everybody was too much for the, as big as the remodel was, they needed to move out. And I should have said no on a lot of things, and I didn't. You know, so that caused a lot of stress for everybody in the process. So that was my big takeaway, is I didn't say no early enough. And, you know, you got to say, wait, stop, we need to reset. You know, instead of, oh, I want to be the good guy and get through this.
Right.
You know, so.
It's so funny how being the good guy end up making you the bad guy.
Right.
You're like, you're trying to do the right thing, and then it just snowballs on you.
Yeah. So another thing that I learned on that one or along the road is, you know, you have to document a lot of stuff. Yeah, we have subcontract agreements for a reason, or we have paperwork for a reason. And it's easy just when you get in a situation in the field to just say, oh yeah, you can do that. Okay, great. I can run to the next job and put out the next fire and all that. But you really have to have a system in place so you can document that change order. And for me, that's been bringing on Lars and Builder Trend, being able to do the change orders. Hey, I can't really do this on site because I'm running and you know, I got to go to the next fire, but call him, say, I need to put this change order together for this and that. And then he gets the paperwork. So I wasn't able to have the backup of the paperwork before, and that was a big lesson for me. So now it's like, well, we know the importance of documenting, do your daily logs, do your man counts, do your change orders, follow your scope of work. You know, it's a lot, but if you do those things right and you back it up, I mean, most of the time that's just for worst case scenario, but it's still good practice and good habit.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. If you get caught without it, you're in trouble. What would you add to that, Josh?
You know, I can think of a couple. One job in particular comes to mind. We talked a little bit about this earlier, about buy-in, you know, and that's where I think collaboration is important, making sure that the guys in the field are on the same page with what's happening, that they're, you know, that they're using the checklist, they're using the tools that are available to them. You know, it's so easy to be like, oh, we're so busy, you know, we don't have time to do a training on this. But like, it's like you skip that hour in the office, like doing this training, and it costs you so many more hours later. You know, you got to have that time, you know. And I think the big takeaway for me on this job that I'm thinking about, you know, is collaboration, making sure that they have buy-in, making sure that they are understanding, you know, the documents they have, you know, to avoid rework. This is a particular situation where I had to take the job over and basically redo all of the roughs, go through, you know, create a punch list, you know, that was like 60 points long to fix all the stuff that had been done incorrectly.
And that's not a change order, that's a punch list.
Yeah,
that's different. That's different.
You're not getting paid for that.
Yeah, those are just corrections. It's like, oh, this switch is in the wrong place. It's here on the plans, but in real life it's here, and there's no reason for there to be. I mean, sometimes things just have to change.
Sure.
You know, because you're dealing with, you know, actual conditions versus theory, you know, and you document those things. But then if there's changes that just are different for no particular reason, you know, it's because someone's dropped the ball. So then to go in after the fact and then pick that ball back up, you know, that's a much harder ball to play with.
It sure is. It's slippery, right? Because it has all that junk on it.
Slippery,
right?
And it's heavy, and yeah, it's
full of layers. That
we can only keep so many balls in the air, and when you get handed some new ones, they can be pretty messy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, that goes back to connecting the field to the office, Tribe, is, you know, sometimes there's those missed expectations or there's not clear understanding, and we're so quick to say, yeah, I got it, but maybe we don't really have it.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to take a few extra minutes and clarify what the expectation is, make sure we're setting it correctly, or make sure we understand it correctly, because just that little bit of communication may cause humongous avalanche.
If I can add a little bit to that.
Sure.
I think that's a lot to do, and this is probably because I've been reading so much Brené Brown, but a lot to do with men and our sort of idea about vulnerability. Like, we can't just admit, like, oh, I don't have it, because other people might look at us and be like, oh, you're stupid.
That's that ego.
You're lazy, or you're not doing this, you're not doing that. When, you know, there's value, I think, in speaking up and be like, you know, I don't have it. I need more information. I need some help. I need this or that. And then for us, you know, or around the situation, sometimes it's us saying, like, hey, I need some help. And sometimes it's us, you know, being the helpers. And we need to be able to do that without judgment. And sort of like kind of peel back the toxic masculinity stuff. Be like, it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to have feelings. You know, this thing of like, you know, this idea of like what men are, you know, is just sort of a destructive, you know, social construct that we need to discard.
Right. And yeah, that perception, we shoot ourselves in the foot regularly because we want to be the person that has it under control and all that. And I've been down this road. It's a whole another podcast, but yeah, there's a lot to that. Get your ego out of the way. Yeah. Open your ears. Listen more. Listen actively. Don't plan on what you're going to say next before you listen to what's been said.
Yes.
And I'm guilty of it. And I'd learn and learn and learn and learn. So many great books out there, and so much going on.
Well, I think that's going to be the power of this Warrior series, is helping us all say, what are the consequences of saying yes, and maybe teaching each other to say no. And maybe we don't have to say no if you just set up the right expectations, right?
Right.
And so in closing this thing out, we always ask on all podcasts to get their perspectives of, Justin, what is your crystal ball for connecting the right technologies to the right handshakes with the future of construction?
That's an abracadabra question right there, right?
Different answer every time, but we want to keep learning from each other.
Well, I see, you know, I'm really into prefabrication, BIM, or modified BIM, using software to see things how they really will be built in real life. So that all that technology with the Zoom and, you know, all the really cool modeling things that are now coming together, I see that as really the future. That I think one day everything will be either 3D printed or have some kind of digital fabrication to it. I just think it's inevitable with the trade pools that are depleting the skills and things like that. You just don't have, you have to rely on manufacturing methods and processes, I think, more and as we move into the future. So that's how I see it.
And agree more. And what is that last thing you're going to leave the Warriors to hear out there from a PM out in the field? What's that one thing you want to leave them for to go out there and crush it to grow their business?
Well, I just said, don't give up. You know, just keep at your passion and keep at your art and educate yourself and ask for help if you need it. You know, there's mentors out there and people putting out great content to try. People do care out there, and you just got to find them. So don't give up.
John, bring us home with the same questions for Josh.
All right, Josh. So what is your crystal ball for technology in field collaboration?
I would say pretty in line with what Justin said. I really think the future is going to be, you know, more about prefab and different things like that to reduce waste, you know, as part of an overall movement toward sustainability and, you know, reducing greenhouse gases. So I think we're going to see, you know, more renewable, more self-sustained, like what I kind of jokingly call, like, you know, the zombie-proof house.
Right, right.
You know, I just put solar on my house, and I'm pushing it on every job these days. You know, so I think we're going to continue to move that direction, prefab and sustainability.
Awesome. And what would you leave the Warriors with? What's your takeaway here? What do you want to put out there?
You know, I think the best advice, you know, I can give as well as take, you know, is to always do your best, to focus on best practices, to educate yourself, you know, make an effort to learn from everyone you can and everywhere you can. Like, there's so many resources these days, you know, with YouTube and audiobooks and conferences and so on. Like, make an effort to be and do your best in all things.
Totally. That's awesome. I couldn't say anything better than that. Well, I appreciate you guys being here. It's been an absolute blast, and looking forward to watching you guys in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming and sharing your story, guys.
Yeah, our pleasure.
It's been awesome. Thank you.
All right, John. So do things differently to elevate the trades. And I think that's what really resonated to me. And it's such an honor to have them come in and help us say, maybe are we putting something out there different? Because in the pre-interviews, I was calling, you know, all of us to action points. And it was like, hey, what are we trying to solve here? What are we trying to solve here? And it was like, well, maybe we need to spend a little bit more time thinking and working on that to just say, how can we do this differently in just another same old way of doing things? And I'm calling myself out there. We're going to have an Art of Construction joint volunteer day for whoever wants to put this together. So we're going to do that. If you're in Denver and want to be part of that, there's all kinds of organizations. And if you're an organization that wants us to be part of your volunteer day, I'm going to call myself out and the other guys that came up to step up themselves. So that's the whole idea of us as leaders, is stepping up together to go build better buildings, right? And at the end of the day, it's about our passion for you, warriors, right? And at the end of the day, they're speaking the truth, right? And it's all legal till you get caught. That's a bunch of bullshit, right? So eventually we're all going to get caught if that's the mindset you're going to have. So that is when we say we're all lifelong learners working together to build better buildings. At the end of the day, it's speaking the truth. And that was what's so great to have them come in and help us do that and say, at the end of the day, tribe, just keep doing your best and never give up. What's your recap, John?
Absolutely. I think that we covered a lot of ground here today. We learned a lot of lessons collaboratively, like doing something differently to bring more success to the trades means not just doing something different for the warriors in the field. It means doing changing the culture of the way things may have been done in the past. And that is such a huge lesson for all of us to learn. Is it may not take a huge change in your company or what you're doing, but if you're trying to educate yourself and learn and grow, that means that you're on the right path. And if you change one thing that benefits everybody around you, next thing you know, you're all more successful. And that really is when we're talking about truth and what they're doing and what we're trying to do through our companies, Devin. I think that really it's all about making those incremental changes that benefits everybody as a whole. And next thing you know, the company's growing and very successful, and the community benefits as well.
Yeah, and thanks for everybody on social media. We've been getting so much great feedback on this to say, I challenge you leaders to challenge your warriors to step up and reach out to us, because this is really what it's all about. Instead of just the big VCs and everybody out that are used to speaking, we want to get the people that aren't used to speaking. And I commend Justin and Josh for doing that. You know, commend Adam for saying, you guys have to do this. And they came in and was like, what's going on here? And just crushing it, right? So that's what this whole thing is about on this warrior movement, is to elevate the trades. And this is how we're going to do that. So how do we do that? We all educate each other. And how do we eat an elephant? One podcast at a time. Crush it out there, tribe.